You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
Unexpectedly heartfelt ukulele performance there from Iceland.
It's Eurovision on 95 BFM with our European correspondent Cameron Mulgan.
This week, Francis talks to European correspondent Cameron Mulgan about the war in Ukraine, NATO applications from Sweden and Finland, McDonald's leaving Russia, mask wearing in Europe at the moment, the outcome of the Swiss Frontex vote, and the event of the year, Eurovision results. Here they are now.
Let's begin with an update on the war in Ukraine.
Another 300,000 refugees have fled Ukraine over the past week. This brings the total up to 6.2 million people having fled, according to the UNHCR. Evacuations of Ukrainian fighters from the Azovstal steel plant have begun. Over 200 fighters and around 50 to 60 wounded have been evacuated to Russian-held areas. It's been reported that they could be used in a prisoner swap for Russian prisoners of war. However, the Russian lower house, the State Duma, is trying to block the move and any further exchanges with members of the Azov battalion. It's unclear if there are any further fighters remaining in the plant. They've been besieged for over 2 months by Russian forces. Some portraits of the wounded were released a few days ago by one of the fighters inside the plant on Instagram. I'd recommend looking it up because it's quite confronting. Troops defending Kharkiv have reached the Russian border, according to Ukraine, with claims of the city being liberated. However, the city is still in range of some Russian shelling and there is still some fighting in the region. There was a significant attack on a Russian attempt at crossing the Seversky-Donetsk River via a pontoon bridge in the Donbass. Ukrainian forces have stated that there were several attempts to build a bridge and cross the river, which would receive heavy shelling. Pictures released show a graveyard of Russian military equipment on both sides of the river and sometimes inside it. Lviv has also had missile attacks being received on both military and railway infrastructure over the past week. Other than that, no other major fighting has been reported. There's been no further progress on the EU oil ban we previously discussed. This is due to Hungarian PM Viktor Orban's opposition, although Germany has stated that it will proceed with its own ban regardless. And the US Senate on Monday advanced a $40 billion Ukraine aid package. It had previously stalled in the Senate due to the objection of the lone Republican Rand Paul. However, that's been defeated. And on Sunday, Zelensky received a visit by the Republican Senate leader Mitch McConnell.
We've spoken before about NATO applications from both Finland and Sweden. Are there any updates there?
Yes, they are. So Sweden and Finland are due to formally apply for NATO tomorrow. This is according to Swedish Prime Minister Magdalena Andersson. Andersson has stated that Sweden and Finland have agreed to go through the application process hand in hand. As we previously discussed on the show, since Russia's invasion in February, support for joining NATO in both countries has shot up. They were both traditionally neutral, and Finland especially had tried to maintain good relations with Russia. However, at a press conference last week, the Finnish president, Sauli Niinisto, had stated to Russia that you caused this and to look in the mirror. It looks like Putin will accept this current enlargement. On Monday, at a meeting with the Collective Security Treaty Organization, which is a Russian-backed military alliance, he stated that he sees no problems with them joining unless NATO equipment or missiles were to be placed in either of the two countries. The rhetoric before these statements were a bit more heavy-handed, and on Friday, Russia stopped exporting electricity to Finland, which is around 10% of Finnish energy supply. NATO membership requires unanimous support, which was initially expected to happen quite quickly. However, Turkey has expressed its opposition due to claimed Swedish and Finnish support for the PKK, which is the Kurdistan Workers' Party. This is a group both Turkey and the EU class as a terrorist organization. It's more likely that this is a negotiating tactic with the US for access to more advanced military equipment. Only a few days ago, US Secretary of State Antony Blinken said that he expected full support. The US will want to resolve this quite quickly, as in theory, Finland and Sweden could be more vulnerable to a military threat during the application process. However, the UK, France, and other Nordic countries have said that they would help defend the applicants if any military action happened. So both Finnish President Niinisto and Swedish Prime Minister Andersson will travel to the White House on Thursday to meet with Joe Biden and discuss their applications.
Let's talk now about business response to the war. I believe McDonald's and some other big players are leaving Russia. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, global giant McDonald's have announced that they are formally withdrawing from Russia. So McDonald's is one of the many Western companies which immediately stopped operations at the start of the invasion. McDonald's claims it will write off between $1.2 to $1.4 billion in the move, having operated over 800 outlets and having 65,000 employees. The BBC report that Russia and Ukrainian operations account for almost 10% of their global revenue last year. It's quite symbolic. When it first opened in 1990, there were queues for hours, and it showed, you know, Russia opening up. There was even one near Red Square in the Kremlin, which I've been to, and it was quite surreal. French car manufacturer Renault has also been nationalized by Moscow. Yesterday, it was announced that it sold off its operations, which include a 67% stake in the large Russian car manufacturer Avtovaz, which made the Lada. It shows that as the war goes on, Russia is getting increasingly isolated by the West. There are still some brands operating. This is due to different franchising agreements, Burger King, Marks and Spencer's, and others. Yale University have a great list, which you could look up, which show that there's still quite a few Western-run companies which are operating. They're mainly industrial, but also include some consumer goods like Diesel or Armani.
Let's talk COVID briefly. I understand the EU has dropped mask mandates on flights. What's the general attitude towards COVID over there at the moment?
Yeah, the European Union Aviation Safety Agency and the European Centre for Disease Prevention and Control have issued an update to the safety measures for air travel last week, saying that masks are not required. However, individual countries can override this rule. So Italy and Spain will still require it, although Spain doesn't have an indoor mask rule. France will also be dropping the requirements for all public transport. In the UK, it hasn't been a requirement for a while. Here in Germany, masks are still in use for public transport and voluntarily for most shops in Berlin. But to be honest, it's kind of been forgotten about, especially with the war in Ukraine. That's kind of where all the political capital and news is being kind of focused on. Last week, however, the WHO announced that there's been 2 million confirmed deaths in Europe from COVID. And according to Reuters, daily infections for Europe are roughly at around 200,000 and decreasing. So yeah, with the summer months and more events happening outside, the numbers will probably stabilize or lower. No one will really care about it until autumn or a new variant pops up.
Can we touch on the Swiss Frontex vote, which we spoke about last week? Is there an outcome for that now?
Yeah, as we expected, over 70% had voted in favour for expanding Frontex. This is the EU's border patrol agency that has received some human rights criticisms due to illegal boat pushbacks. In the weeks leading up to the vote, European Commissioner for Home Affairs, Ylva Johansson, had warned that not increasing funding would jeopardise Switzerland's membership for the free movement Schengen area. So this means that now Switzerland will increase their funding by 60 million euros up, by 2027.
And finally, we get to do this Eurovision segment a little bit of justice. Can you tell me about the Eurovision results?
Yeah, finally we can do Eurovision. Maybe next year I can get like a press pass and go or something. So yeah, Ukraine has won Eurovision. This is with the song Stefania by the Kalush Orchestra. The Kalush Orchestra were a late addition to Eurovision, with Ukraine being added after the Russian invasion. Russia was also disqualified. The lead, Ole Psyuk, wrote the song about his mother before the war, but it came to embody and represent all the matriarchs in Ukraine. Due to Ukraine's mobilization, they needed special permission to leave the country to perform. I'd highly recommend checking out the music video, which was released just after they won. It was filmed in the bombed out buildings around Kiev. So it's kind of surreal to see music videos shot just weeks after the towns were liberated, and it's a great piece of propaganda. The UK also surprisingly came second. This was with Sam Ryder's Spaceman. Normally the UK does really, really poorly. Last year, following Brexit, they came last with 0 points.
Macedonia with a reggae twist.
That was Eurovision on 95 BFM.
That was a 95 BFM podcast. Support 95 BFM with a B-card. Go to 95bfm.com/signup.